Good afternoon, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here on American Warrior Radio. Let's start off with some history, as we usually do. On this date, July 17, 1801, the United States fleet arrived off the shores of Tripoli. The Pasha of Tripoli had demanded $225,000, that's about $3.2 million in today's dollars, in tribute so that U.S. merchant ships would not be attacked. President Thomas Jefferson refused the demand, and the Barbary pirates declared war. In a latter battle that would prove the turning point of the war, William Eaton and Marine Lieutenant Presley O'Bannon led a force of 8 Marines and 500 mercenaries across the desert to capture the city of Derna. This was the first time the U.S. flag was raised in victory on foreign soil and would prove to be the inspiration for the phrase, "To the shores of Tripoli," in the Marines' hymn. Let me tell you about David Crowder Weber. Weber worked as a grocery clerk and a ranch hand before enlisting as a private in the Army in 1940. He would later become a commissioned officer, and during the Allied invasion of Sicily, he was a first lieutenant in command of the 3rd Reconnaissance Troop of the 3rd Infantry Division. On the night of July 17, 1943, 1 week after the invasion began, Weber volunteered to lead a reconnaissance patrol consisting of 3 lightly armed jeeps deep in enemy territory to locate a missing Ranger patrol. Proceeding under the cover of darkness over roads known to be heavily mined and strongly defended by roadblocks and machine gun nests, the patrol's progress was halted at a bridge which had been destroyed by enemy troops, and they were suddenly cut off from their supporting vehicles by 4 enemy Italian tanks. Although hopelessly outnumbered and outgunned and himself and his men completely exposed, he quickly dispersed his vehicles and ordered his gunners to open fire with their 30 and 50 caliber machine guns. Then, with ammunition exhausted, 3 of his men hit and himself wounded, Mr. Weber seized his 45 caliber Thompson machine gun and, standing in the bright moonlight directly in the line of fire, alone, engaged the leading tank at 30 yards and succeeded in killing the crew members, causing the tank to run onto a bridge and crash into the stream bed. After dispatching 1 man for aid, he rallied the rest to cover and withstood the continued fire of the remaining tanks until help arrived the following morning. For his extraordinary heroism that night, David Weber was awarded the Medal of Honor. He was sent home to work on war bond tours, but he asked to be returned to combat duty. He was killed in action in Germany on March 28, 1945, 2 years after earning the Medal of Honor. He is buried in the Lorraine American Cemetery in France. Folks, we always get great guests here on American Warrior, and it's with somewhat of American Warrior tradition. Today, we're joined by the mayor. No, not that mayor. What I like to call the mayor of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Colonel James Meagher is commander of the 355th Fighter Wing at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, the largest military base in Arizona, and one of the largest installations of flying operations in the United States Air Force. You've got 7,500 airmen, give or take.
Yes. Good afternoon, Ben. Thanks. First of all, thanks for having me out here. Yeah, so in the fighter wing, I have roughly about 4,700 to 5,000-ish, depending. And total on the installation is about 7,500 active-duty airmen. Then once we start taking all the civilians and other folks that work on the installation, we're approaching 10,000 kind of on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I tell you, Colonel Jim Meigs, what do you want me to call you?
Jim's great.
Jim. this is always a joy for me because it's almost like I said, it's become a tradition. Every 2 years, we have the opportunity to talk to the outgoing commander of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, our Air Force Base, our neighbors there, just sort of a reflection on your time in the service or in this, you know, in your command at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. So we're really pleased to get the opportunity to have you. You're retiring in just a couple of weeks, so things are probably pretty busy. So thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, you know, you kind of learn some of that stuff you remember in college as you approach the speed of light, time's supposed to slow down.
Yeah.
What I found as, you know, towards the end of this, you know, this 2 year absolutely incredible journey that we've been on, my wife and I, Carrie, of, you know, being able to be part of the 355th Fighter Wing, our honor to serve those airmen. Well, as the time approaches towards the end, everything seems to accelerate, and including the time. It's going by so fast. And if I look back and I go 2 years and 4 days will be the total time from 1 August 14 to 5 August of 16, I'm like, wow, it's been an incredible journey. We are absolutely humbled and honored to have been part of what this installation has done, what it's done with the community, what it's done for this nation, as well as the combat power that we've generated and the folks that we've sent and trained downrange.
Now, this was not your first stop at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, though.
So, actually, yeah, if you wind the clock back to, like, 1993, I came here as a second lieutenant to go through A-10 training for the first time. And I happened to run into a young lady who is a senior at the University of Arizona. And that, you know, now we fast forward the clock 21 years later and 3 amazing children that are, you know, part of the school systems here. And we absolutely love it. And that's one of the reasons why when we decided to start talking family and what our priorities, and we're going to stay in Tucson after this. So
wonderful. So Tucson gets to keep Jim Meagher and his wife and kids.
Yeah, you're lucky to have my wife and kids. You're kind of stuck with me.
Okay, well, now you also came back. You served, if I'm not mistaken, Jim, as the vice commander at Davis-Monthan as well.
Yeah, that's right. So back in 2011, after I was finishing up a advanced kind of course called what we call National War College, where I did some national strategic studies level kind of education, I came back to Davis-Monthan when I was the vice wing commander, and I was here from 11 to 13. And then I went downrange for a year to Kabul, Afghanistan, and kind of throughout most of Afghanistan for a year doing various things. Ultimately, my job was to – I was the second in command of all the airmen that were in Afghanistan. And then back here, I was selected to come back as the wing commander then. So that started 1 August of 14, like we mentioned.
So relative to wing commanders, and I tell you, it's interesting. We, as I follow the careers of some of the folks that have been through DM, they go on to be pretty impressive. They rise up through the ranks to further leadership positions. As the one of the largest installations in the Air Force, is that, I have to guess, Jim, that the assigning someone to command the 355th Wing is not a random thing. I mean, they're
right. You know, honestly, it's for all the wing commanders. None of them are random. And it is very a kind of a deliberate process and deliberate development of the senior officers because of the incredible responsibility that we are entrusted with. You know, the greatest treasure that this nation has is our sons and daughters and making sure that they're ready to go and to be able to lead them and be able to see the strategic vision and, you know, where things are going and be able to adapt and to do that. There is a deliberate process that we go through where it's called kind of, you know, a command screening board, and you start looking for the right people for the right place.
Now, would the commander at DM, as long as we've got the A-10 mission, would it necessarily need to be an A-10 pilot? Your relief, Colonel Campbell, he's A-10?
Yes, he is. Okay. He's fantastic. He's got 3 Distinguished Flying Crosses.
He's not the only one.
Yeah, he is an incredible leader, and we are absolutely lucky to have him both on the installation and for the community. Both, you know, his family is fantastic. So it doesn't necessarily have to be an A-10 person, but that's generally what they'd like so that they understand some of the unique aspects of the mission for that weapon system.
Now, you've got over 3,200 flight hours. Most of those in an A-10, or you also flew F-15s briefly?
I did. I flew F-15s for about 7 years, and I flew AT-38s for a couple years as well. But the preponderance of my time is in the A-10. I'm probably about a little less than 2,000 hours in the A-10 right now.
I had a guest on who was one of the very first A-10 pilots, Bill Pitts.
Yeah.
And I think he called it the ugliest plane you'll ever love.
Oh, absolutely. It is. It's a beast.
Beast is good. We'll get into your other philosophy on how when we go to war, we want to have the odds strongly in our favor. Folks, your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. Our guest today is the gentleman I like to call the mayor of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Officially, he's the commander of the 355th Fighter Wing and the base as a whole. Stick around, Jim. When we come back, I was at a retirement ceremony, a change of command ceremony recently for Colonel Scholl. And during your remarks, you just started listing off the accomplishments at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base over the last couple of years, and they were astounding. I mean, in a good way. So when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Folks, your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. Stick around. Welcome back, folks. Your host here on Ben Buehler-Garcia here on American Warrior. You heard the El Charro ad. That means it's time for our Cervezas Sir Yes Sir question of the day. If you are the first caller, there's no second place here at American Warrior Radio. If you're the first caller with a question for our guest, Colonel James Meagher, you'll receive a $20 gift card to the new El Charro Steak Restaurant in downtown Tucson. And, folks, this is a delicious, delicious place to eat. So, Jim, back to you. We're talking a little bit before the break. Laura and I were at a change of command for Colonel Scholl, who was the Mission Support Group Commander, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's kind of who I would call the mayor of the base because he's responsible for maintaining everything on it. So, yeah, he's absolutely fantastic. And another huge win for Tucson is that he's staying in the local area,
that's
too.
That's a good point. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, that's a whole separate discussion. What I've been engaged in supporting the military for years, but I got to tell you, your comments during that ceremony, you just started ticking off some of the achievements while Colonel Scholl was there, coincidentally, at the same time you were the commander, and some of the things going back to when you're in the vice commander. And Tucson loves our base, as we should. But I got to tell you, in the pantheon of Air Force bases, DM is pretty damn sharp, isn't it? I mean, some of the awards you won were the installation of the year once. And if you would just relate to some of the folks that what some of those successes are, because I think a lot of us don't see. Right. We see the airplanes. Yeah. We don't know what's happening about on the ground.
Right. Here's the deal. I'm the wing commander, right? So I'm going to say this is the best installation in the United States Air Force. Of course I'm going to say that, right? Because it's mine.
Is this kind of like who's the best fighter pilot in a room of fighter pilots?
Yeah, exactly.
You've got the data to back it up.
So that's exactly right. We do. If you look back and you kind of look at what we've created here at Davis-Monthan, and I think it really is truly something special. It's this level of excellence and commitment that people have to the mission, that people have to the installation. And it's honestly the synergies that we have with the community, too, including the community partnership initiatives that we've put forward, and that the community just has jumped on board. And so that all put together in 2012 led us to be named the number one installation in the United States Air Force. Well, then if you fast forward a little bit, you're not eligible for a year or two because they're like, hey, you just won it. And so they're trying to give someone else an opportunity. Then if you look back and you go, hey, last year we were the number one installation in all of Air Combat Command. We came in third overall. I think we got robbed, but of course I'm going to say that, right? But we're the number one in all of Air Combat Command, which is the 26 installations that are part of that major command that we're in. And if you look at how does this happen? Okay, it's not necessarily about new stuff that you have. It's about what you're doing with the resources that you're given. And if you look, the foundation for the whole thing really is our civil engineers and part of the mission support group. And they're the number one civil engineering squadron in the United States Air Force.
Wow.
If you look, and on the mission side, you look at the diverse mission sets that we have and how much combat power that we've generated. We have the largest flying hour program in all of Air Combat Command. And certainly is the single busiest, single runway operation that's in all of Air Combat Command as well. So if you start combining all those things, we have the number one firefighter in the DOD, we have the number one logistics officer, and our logisticians are absolutely fantastic. Our defenders are taking wards at every level. We have the number one command post. And you just start looking at all these things and you go, okay. And then we were validated again when Air Combat Command and the Inspector General team came in. And we're under this new system for the past almost 3 years now. And no one's been able to crack the code on, you know, what are they really trying to figure out and what are they after until they came to Davis-Monthan. And they looked around and they go, this is the absolute best that we have seen ever in the United States Air Force. And we are currently the only wing that has ever received an outstanding rating on what's called the Unit Effectiveness Inspection. And so that looks at compliance. It looks at mission effectiveness. It looks at the effective use of resources and the leadership team that makes up the installation. And I'm just super proud of everything that they've accomplished along that way to get to that point. And this is why we've been generating a ton of combat power to go downrange.
Right. Now, you had one of your largest deployments, I think, since World War II. Not recently, but in the last couple of years, correct?
That's correct. So that started out right after I got here. And what this is the way that we present combat forces to the commanders downrange. And so we take larger chunks from installations so that they can be a coherent team when they show up. So they're not meeting someone for the first time. So it's the coworkers that they're used to working with. Now, it makes it difficult for the installation. But what we did, we deployed about 1,100 airmen downrange, and we did it kind of backwards. You can imagine if you're going to send your airplanes and all your iron out, you'd want to send that out first. Well, we send all the people out first, and then suddenly we got to figure out how to get the airplanes out. It's just the way it flowed out. It wasn't optimum, but we figured out a way and made it happen. And that's what we're staring at coming up right now. We've already started sending folks downrange. People are leaving today from TIA, and they left yesterday as well. So they're going out, and they're taking the fight downrange, and they're doing what needs to be done.
Wonderful. We've got our caller. Shane is the winner of our El Charro Family Restaurant Sir Yes Sir question of the day. Shane, what is your question or comment for Colonel Meagher?
My question, Colonel, like many Tucsonans drive along Gulf Links, you see the copper or gold-colored pyramid buildings to the south of the road, and I got once it was probably less than a rumor, I was told that it was actually like a general's compound for somebody for like the Pacific Command, and I'd really like to have you tell us what you could about it.
Oh, absolutely. So, Shane, thanks for calling. So what that is, there is a whole bunch of mission partners on the installation. So as the commander of the 355th Fighter Wing, I have the A-10s on the installation that are there, along with our reserve partners. And so what you're seeing is what we call the copper top. And that's one of the big mission partners, and that's 12th Air Force, Air Forces Southern, and they have a couple missions. One, that's my boss that does work in there, and you're right, that's Lieutenant General Mark Noland, and he's a three-star general. And so that's where he works, and he's in charge of a bunch of wings that are all across kind of the west and southwest United States, up from Hill Air Force Base in Utah. Then there's Mountain Home Air Force Base up in Idaho. He's got a wing over in New Mexico. So he's got a bunch of different things. He has Creech Air Force Base out in near Nellis Air Force Base up in near Las Vegas. So he's in charge of all those things. In addition, he has a warfighting component where he reports to the four-star for what's called Southern Command. So he has quite a few jobs, and that's what we call the copper top, and that's what you're seeing out there.
I really appreciate you clarifying that, because I know a lot of guys like me will drive by and go, what is that sitting out there?
Yeah.
Well, Shane, thanks for your call, and stay on the line, Rear. We'll get your information for that gift card, and thanks for your call. Now, just because you can't win a gift card doesn't mean you can't call. Colonel Meagher is live in the studio, 751-1041. If you always want to have a question answered, like what is the copper top? Now, I've never heard it called a compound before, Jim. I don't know if General Noland would necessarily agree with that, but it does speak to, you've been successful not only as the wing commander, but I know a lot of Tucsonans maybe don't appreciate, you mentioned the diversity of missions at the base. You've got a lot of other missions, a lot of other tenant units like the 12th Air Force, like the 943rd Rescue Group. Tell us a little bit about that diversity of mission there. It's not just A-10s flying out of DM.
Yeah, absolutely, Ben. So what we have, if you start looking at, you know, the structure as a whole, it is incredibly complex and diverse, quite honestly. So you start out with a copper top like Shane just asked about, and that's the 12th Air Force. That's a huge command and control element. And with that comes what they call an AOC. And what that is basically it's a huge command post for the three-star to be able to run operations all anywhere in South America. And frankly, he could run them almost anywhere in the world based on the connectivity that they have.
Mm-hmm.
There's several reserve groups that are out there, part of what we call our total force enterprise. So we do have the 943rd Rescue Group. We also have the 924th Fighter Group, and they are our A-10 partners in what we call our formal training unit, where this installation is the only installation in the world that trains all the A-10 pilots. So it doesn't matter if you're a guardsman, a reservist, or active duty, this is where you come to get trained. It's kind of the A-10 hub and you know, the central location for all that. We have the Electronic Combat Group on the other end of the ramp. So that's the 55th Electronic Combat Group. And that's the EC-130s that you see flying around. They are absolutely fantastic, and they're going on about 13 years straight of deployment at this time.
Wow.
Right. We also have the 563rd Rescue Group. We have the Boneyard, which is another major command. Mm. So that's part of Air Force Materiel Command. You know, in addition, we have Customs and Border Protection and Tucson Air and Marine on the installation, along with the FAA. Quite a big.
So it is diverse. And I want to emphasize again, and correct me if I've got this wrong, but the electronic combat mission, this is the only place in the United States Air Force that is there. We've got them. That's it, right?
That's it.
Wow.
There's only 14 of them in the world.
Wow. Folks, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. What a great opportunity to be joined by the commander of the 355th Wing, Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, Colonel Jim Meagher. We're live in studio. If you have a question or comment, feel free to give us a call, 751-1041. Jim, when we come back, you'd mentioned the importance of the relationship and the outreach to the community. When we come back, if you don't mind, I'd like to chat a little bit about that and what you've done and how that continues to be one of the best in the Air Force. Stick around, folks. Don't forget, check us out on Facebook, American Warrior Daily Mail Radio, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here in American Warrior. We're joined by Colonel James Meagher. Colonel Meagher is the commander of the 355th Fighter Wing. I called him the mayor of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, but I've been corrected. But premier? King?
No.
Maybe?
No.
No? Okay. All
no.
Right. Well, good try. Jim, before we took the break, we talked about the reason for this show is to educate civilians about the men and women of our military and what they do. A lot of time we spend talking about preparing the pilots, the maintainers, the rescue people, making sure that you are fulfilling to make sure that our men and women of the Air Force are trained and ready to go at a moment's notice. But when you're a base commander, it also involves a lot of interaction with the local community. And I would think, especially so in a town like Tucson, Arizona, where the relationship between the town and the base is going back for a very, very long time. Your thoughts on that relationship and how it's been maintained and where it stands?
You know, I am the envy of a lot of wing commanders. When they look at, they come to Davis-Monthan, they come to Tucson, and they see the support and they see the community that's involved with the installation, and they go, I don't have that. How did you create this? I'm like, well, they came to me, right? And it's been around for a long time. If you really wind the clock all the way back, so John Ruthroff, you know, a U of A graduate, went and actually petitioned his congressman back in 1925, and in 1926, they were granted a piece of land which became Tucson Municipal Airport, which then later became Davis-Monthan. And so since that time, this installation has been a cornerstone of national security. Through World War II, it was known as the Liberator Base because most of the B-24 crews were trained here, and the Military Affairs Committee was here even before the installation was.
Right.
So they have been around longer than the installation itself has been here. So they were ready to go when the first airmen showed up, part of the Army Air Corps way back in the day. So you can start your facts right there. You can start your level of support that begins right there. And now we look at what we've evolved to. So we have, you know, the DM-50, which is absolutely incredible, helping us out with the things on the installation and taking care of our airmen. We have the Military Affairs Committee. You know, SATA's out there advocating, you know, what you're part of, Tucson Community Cares. Obviously, that is a huge part of all these things, and you start aggregating all these up, and it is just incredible. Secretary of the Air Force came out, and she looked around, and she saw the community and the relationships, and she goes, this is amazing. She goes, I don't see this in most places where I go.
You know, it's interesting, as I traveled around to different bases when I was the honorary commander for the 12th Air Force, I visited 6, 7, 8 bases, and I would try and take the time to chat with the community leaders. Most bases have the equivalent of a DM-50 or a MAC or something like that, but I did not find very many that had a organization, other organizations that are so regularly engaged where you're actually going off base to meet with and engage with the population as well, and I think that's a real strength. Perhaps a little bit of frustration sometimes, but that's a real strength for you and for Davis-Monthan Air Force Base.
Right, and I believe in that open communication. We had kind of the DM open house down at Rincon High School where I brought as much as I could of the installation, you know, outside from the installation and brought it down to Rincon so that folks could come and interact with the airmen. I want you to because they're absolutely amazing. You look at the level of commitment and patriotism, and, you know, they are just absolutely fantastic. I just want you to kind of sit and talk with them. One of the things that you mentioned a second ago, Ben, you started talking about, you know, the rescue and the pilots and stuff, and what I kind of equate the entire team to, it's kind of like a watch, right? You may look on top of the watch and go, at the end state, that's what you're seeing is this thing's telling me time. But if you have to dig into the inside of that watch, right, everything has to function perfectly for it to be able to do that, which is all the logisticians and the personnelists and the civil engineers and the maintenance. And everyone has that part of making that watch work, including the community, because that's the underpinning that's holding this whole thing up.
Now, Jim, you probably remember, but in a fit of insanity, I ran for city council, and I've gotten over that. I think I'm fully recovered. I got the shots and everything. But we have talked previously about your job. You swore an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. Your job is to protect our country and to make sure your personnel go out and do their job and come back. That's your job, period. But you extend it further beyond that because I just want to emphasize again the importance of that good relationship that we have in Tucson. To some extent, does having that kind of relationship make it easier for you and your airmen to do their jobs?
Absolutely. And here's why. There are certain things that I can't do by law, right? I would love to be able to do certain things and provide things. I can't do it. So when those 1,200, 1,100 airmen came back from their deployment, you know, the single largest deployment we mentioned since World War II, I was kind of kicking around. I go, we need to kind of have a welcome home party for everyone, and let's just take some time and recognize it, bring the families out, you know, and have a big gathering. And it was the community goes, Tucson said, we want to put that on for you. And they took it and they ran with it. So I quite literally, I just stood back and the community stepped up and they provided that for all the airmen. and just a way to say thank you when they came back. And it's stuff like that that makes the airmen feel special, makes them feel wanted and part of the Tucson community. Because when they show up in Tucson, they're in it right away, and they can feel it.
Now, one of the programs that a lot of folks probably don't know about, we do have a lot of business owners or executives that listen to KQTH, the Honorary Commander Program. That's something that your predecessor really revived and got going. The PA shop's done a great job of that. If someone out there is a business leader who would like to get involved more intensely, tell them very briefly about the Honorary Commander Program and why you think that, or why that's been important to you as the wing commander.
That is a great question, first of all. So what it is, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head. And what I really love about it is a lot of people know that the base is there and they go, there's some stuff that goes on. But once they get inside and they're like, oh my goodness, this really is an eye opener to see. And if they want to be part of it, you know, we encourage everyone to have an opportunity, and we have a number here for you. So I want you to call my public affairs shop if you're interested in being part of that. That's 520-228-3378. And that's my public affairs shop. And they help me oversee the Honorary Commander Program. And what we do, we bring you to different parts of the installation, and we show you what we do kind of on a day-to-day basis and kind of immerse you in with the squadron. And in addition, you know, showing you the rest of the things that go on throughout the installation on a day-to-day basis.
And of course, the goal is also then, even once people pass, that you're in effect educating advocates to be able to go back out in the community. So on a peer-to-peer basis as business people, they can say, hey, I've been there, I see what they're doing, and here's why it's important, and here's how you can help. And what really I enjoy, Jim, is it's been engaged and going strong enough where now, just like we see the change of command when outgoing commander hands the guide on to an incoming commander, you're now starting to see that on the honorary commander level as well, where you're seeing that transition taking place out in the civilian community. And I just, congratulations to you and your PA shop. That's a great, fabulous program, and a lot of fun, too.
Right, and, you know, I didn't throw that out there with all these things that we want as, you know, the number one of this and that, and it's the number one PA shop for crisis management and several other things that happen around the installation, too. So number one in the United States Air Force.
I'm not surprised. I kid you about being the mayor of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, but for civilians who haven't been on the base, you've got personnel, you've got housing, you've got shopping, you've got a fire department, you've got a hospital, you've got your own schools. I mean, this is really kind of a self-contained community, but I'm guessing as a commander, you don't want your folks just to come in, stay inside the gate, and only leave when they're deploying, right?
Oh, absolutely not, yeah.
Because, I mean, I see your airmen out there engaged in the community doing volunteer work all the time as well.
Right. So, and I know that you come down, and the community is part of the welcoming when they come to what we call our Right Start program. Mm-hmm. So when they show up to the installation, we start talking about, you know, here's the things that are going on at Davis-Monthan, and here are the things that you need to know when you know, just arrived at Tucson. And the first thing I start talking about is the community and the relationship and the things that are available for you in Tucson that you may not know about. So it is rich, and it keeps going on, and there's so much to see and do around here, you know, all through Arizona. You know, I kid everyone, especially the young kids, I go, there's a big hole in the ground that's kind of up to the north here. You need to go check it out if you haven't seen it yet. Plus everything else that's really, you know, honestly local that we're part of, which is absolutely fantastic.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim. Folks, I'm live in studio with the commander of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. We are taking calls. 751-1041. If there's something you've ever wanted to ask Commander, give us a call. Time flies by, and I want to, for the last segment, Jim, I just want you to say, I mean, a quarter century in service to our country, three assignments at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, just some of your reflections on the community and your service when you come back. Folks, your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia on American Warrior Radio. Stick around. Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia here on American Warrior Radio. Our guest live in studio is Colonel James Meagher. He is, for about another 2 weeks, the commander of Davis. Well, it's true, right?
It is. It's going fast, Ben.
What is the fighter pilot equivalent of a lame duck? Is there such a thing?
There's no such thing.
No, okay. I didn't think so. I mean, literally,
you're in the fight all the way to the end. We're going to hit the tape. Carrie and I are going to hit the tape, the finish line, at top speed. We're going to be running red line the entire time. That's the only way you do it.
And we're very pleased that you and your family are going to stay here. We talk often about the economic impact of Davis-Monthan, which is very important to our community, but the human impact while your airmen are here, the way they're engaged in our community, and the opportunity to keep tremendous leaders like yourself, like Colonel Schultz, like other folks here in our community, General Santarelli, makes a big difference. So we've got, Jim, about 9 minutes here. Just so people understand, I tease you about being the mayor of Dayton. And by the way, I'd be remiss, Laura would make sure I mention this. You also have horses, right, at DM?
Well, there's a
stable.
A stable that's down there. Okay. They're not like Air Force horses. Right?
No, right. Okay. There's no cavalry. That's no. a different branch. But you no. do have, I mean, you've got it all.
It's at just, there's space, and there's a little saddle club that they call it that's, you know, kind of down there where people that own horses can do that, and they take care of all the things down there. It's $0 that I have to put into it.
I just learned that just a few minutes ago. I was like, wow, we've got a stable at DM. But so what keeps you up at night? What is your, in the little time we got left, well,
yeah.
All you.
So big question, right? Let me take it up to kind of the big level, what I see. So I was hired in this job to organize, train, and equip folks to go and deploy downrange. And you start kind of walking yourself through that. If you look at what our nation does and what our DOD does, we're really engineered to be an away-only team. We do some stuff from home station, you know, some of the UAS operators, unmanned aerial systems, and some of the, you know, strategic deterrence kind of things and command and control pieces can be done remotely. But for the most part, the DOD is engineered to be an away team. And every game that we play, we have to win 100-0. I'm not interested in a 51-49 game ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. And so when we took over as a team, Carrie and I and the rest of the command team that was here in the installation, I came up with, you know, the mission and vision statement and the four priorities. And my number one priority that I've always taken is to provide a combat-ready force. And that means they have to be ready, they have to be trained, they have to be ready physically, spiritually, emotionally, financially, and making sure that they're set. And we have to develop those airmen. We have to grow the next generation of leaders. Because if I got taken out today, this installation is going to go on just fine because the next leader is ready to step up and start leading because that's what we do. That's the difference when you start looking from business to military operations. We have to make sure that we care for all those families because they're an integral part of the entire thing. And then I need to optimize all the resources that I'm given, which includes my airman's time, which includes money, which it's everything to be as effective as I can. Because what really counts is not how efficient I am. There are times when I will sacrifice a level of efficiency. It may cost me a few more man hours, but it makes me more effective because, again, I got to win 100-0, and that's our job. And so that's the when it comes down to deploying the folks, that keeps me up at night. When it comes down to making sure we're taking care of all the families back here so that the folks downrange can focus on the mission and what they need to do, that'll keep me up at night. And how do I make sure I have the training set and develop those airmen right, so that I can turn around and deploy them later, that keeps me up at night.
What are some of the, in 25 years, are there any moments that stand out, either as a first lieutenant or on up to flying? Of those 3,200 hours, some of that was combat. And I was honestly, folks, you know, the colonel mentioned the incoming commander has got 3 Distinguished Flying Crosses. Our guest here today has 3 as well. So we don't have to get into the details of that, but what moments stand out, whether it's family or the camaraderie or those that didn't come home? What stands out?
Yeah. Wow. I'm having a flood of different things. That'll okay. Just, you know, how do you capture, you know, 25 years in a couple sound bites and a couple words with the, you know, the short time we have left? And I'm going to try and do that when, you know, we start talking about retirement stuff. But if, you know, I look back and my dad always said, hey, it's the people. You know, you got to remember and take care of the people. And what I always try and do is hoard memories. Try not to hoard stuff, but hoard memories.
Hmm.
And when I look at things, you know, one of the things that drives my wife nuts is all the coffee cups I have. And she's like, why do you have to have all these coffee cups? I'm like, I don't see a coffee cup. What I see is I see that mug that's from Osan Air Base, Korea. And when you and I lived in a one-bedroom apartment downtown in Korea and we're living off the economy in Korea and getting up in the morning, you know, when we've been married 6 months and we're having a cup of coffee, you know, sitting in our one-bedroom apartment. And then I have the, you know, the cup of coffee from Germany. And I took that cup with me when I deployed down to Italy. And, you know, when I left the house that day, you were gone. You were back in Tucson actually visiting your parents. And I left a note at the door that said, hey, babe, I went to war. I'll call you when I get there. I don't know when I'm going to get back.
You literally left a note that said that.
I left a note at the door because there were no cell phones and she was flying back that day. Or I have a cup of coffee in my mug from Moody Air Force Base when my son was born, or one from Columbus, Georgia, or Columbus, Mississippi, when my daughter was born. And, you know, I pull out that coffee mug, and that's what I see. And those are some of the memories and things that we've gathered as a family along the way. And so it's a lot, you know, and that's a really big question.
Well, and I've got to say, and congratulations and thanks to your family as well, because we need to mention that, you know, our airmen, our Marines, our soldiers, our sailors, our Coasties, they all serve, but the families serve as well. When you deploy, kind of sort of the whole family deploys, and there's a change at home. There's a shift that needs to take place.
There is, and what I say about that is, you know, we will serve. I'm serving. Who's sacrificing are the families. You know, that's my wife and kids that are sacrificing, you know, and then, you know, you take it to the ultimate sacrifice. You mentioned support and defend the Constitution. You know, they raised their right hand and said, I give up life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in order to support and defend the Constitution. And they have some have made the ultimate sacrifice. And I was at way too many what we called ramp ceremonies over in Afghanistan during that year when we had our fallen heroes that we would have a transfer for where we would, you know, start the process of, you know, returning them back to their families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something you don't want to go through. Every one of those was hard.
Well, and the nature of the work that you're involved in, Jim, it's not just dangerous when people are shooting at you, but training is dangerous. A lot of moving parts out there.
Absolutely. We have to train to that level, though, because that's what combat demands. You don't want to walk in and don't ever think you're going to fight a JV team. You need to be ready for the pro levels every single day. And so that's the readiness. And that goes back to how I flow my priorities of providing that combat-ready force and develop and train our airmen. We just went and, you know, sent my combat-coded fighter squadron up to Red Flag, Alaska, where we did very high-end training. It was eye-watering for them. We kind of got our nose bloodied initially when we first started. And then we got better and better and better through the exercise, and we're going to keep ratcheting up the level and intensity of training as we go because they're getting on step and getting themselves ready to deploy here in the not too far future.
Couple minutes. What would you like to share what you like to see going forward? I mean, I know that's not your decision to make, but you've got a lot of experience. You've got a particular lot of experience here at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Well, let me make it a little bit more palatable. What would you like to see us as a community either continue to do or maybe step up? What can the individual Tucsonans out there do, or just anyone around the country do to support airmen?
You know, you're doing it, and keep that going. It's that level of support. It's just the, hey, thank you. People really appreciate that. You know, military folks will dig inside and we'll go, we got this. You know, we'll just throw another rock in our rucksack and off we go. And we're ready to do that. And so just the level of support that we have already is amazing. So thank you for that. And kind of my little bit of a, I guess, parting shot as I, you know, wind up 25 years is I'll always be an airman. I got the DNA of an airman, and that's never going to change. It's going to be Air Force Blue as we go forward. And if you see me around the community, let's, you know, I'd love to stop and talk with you. And I'm going to be incredibly proud to have been the wing commander here and part of the support structure, and I will continue to be part of that as we go forward, the entire family. And we're looking forward to it.
No, you know what my plans are for you?
Yeah.
I want you to run for the other mayor slot.
Yeah.
No, not you probably can't afford the cut
no,
and pay.
No, I'm good, thank you. I just talked with Mayor Rothschild the other day. He came in for supporting the installations.
And he has been very supportive. Yeah, good for him. Well, Meeks, thank you so much. And Eddie, just want to mention, I know there's at least one family member listening here who might be thrilled to hear her name. I don't know who that would be.
Oh, well, I think Allie, Ryan, Abby, and Carrie are all listening. I know there's a couple other folks out there, too. And I just really appreciate all the support, you know, especially for my family. I love you guys. Thank you. And then everyone else that's out there, thanks for tuning in today.
Well, I'll tell you what, thank you for your service, Jim. Laura and I will be at your last couple ceremonies and standing very proud and singing the Air Force song very loudly on your behalf. So, Colonel Meagher, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up next week, it's considered the greatest small boat rescue in Coast Guard history. It was featured in the Disney movie, The Finest Hours. We've got the lone living crew member of that show, that rescue, Andrew Fitzgerald, on this show. Tune in next week. Don't forget to check us out, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Take care.